to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Watch your back, son.
I'm Luke.
I'm Captain Janeway of the USS Voyager.
Welcome to the Greatest Generation. It's a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys. Still a little bit embarrassed about having a Star Trek podcast. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison.
What do you want to talk about?
It's the Max Fun Block Party.
All right.
You always do a fun thing, Adam, where we have a thing to do together to make our podcast, and you make me feel like I am making you do it.
That's the bit, Ben. Your business, Ben, and I'm don't need this shit, Adam.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, Adam, people rely on this show, okay?
It should be a utility.
Yeah. Why isn't the federal government paying us to do this?
I know.
And distributing to everyone for free.
Yeah. Instead, we're pimping ourselves at a block party trying to meet new people.
Yeah.
We're putting our best foot forward out there. We're releasing clip shows to people. If you haven't checked that out, we either have already or are about to release a Greatest Gen, Greatest Hits episode.
Yeah, and an episode where we team up with our buddies over at the Dead Pilot Society and talk about making our respective podcasts, and that should be a lot of fun as well.
We should put out a cover to that episode that is like the Essential Hits CD covers.
Like, now that's what I call Greatest Gen?
No, like the Essential Collection series of CDs where it's a photograph in black and white, and then it's like the Essential Greatest Generation.
We didn't really have the bandwidth to do the Essential Greatest Discovery, and I kind of have been feeling bad about that. I feel like there's some great stuff on that show, and I wish we'd like taken the time to mine it the way we did for this one.
We've got enough viewers for Greatest Gen. What we need is more viewers for Greatest Discovery, and a clip show is a great way to do that.
Yeah.
Give people a good first bite of a show.
Here's where we've been. Here's where we are. Here's where we're going.
Here's what I'm going to do. Here's what I'm doing. Here's what I did.
Did you like that? Did you like that shit?
Yeah, maybe we can get with our friends from the Discord to see if we can't pull some clips from that show and put out another episode for The Greatest Discovery. It's a show I'm really proud of, and especially now because we're covering such great new Star Trek like Lower Decks.
Yeah. Maybe we'll have that ready in time for the next Max Fun Block Party if this becomes an annual event.
Yeah. Yeah, I like our timing on that. We are buried. I feel like if shows were snow, I would be like, I'm trying to carve out that part under the, can't fucking think right now. What's the thing where a bunch of snow falls on you? Avalanche? I'm dying, Ben. My brain is just, it's all the middle parts of a sponge and none of the sponge itself.
I think we're going to have one of those episodes where there's only one set of footprints in the sand, but it's like one of my feet and one of your feet, and we're like soldiers that are like hopping each other off the battlefield.
It's not healthy what we're doing, Ben.
No.
It's not healthy to do nothing but watch Star Trek and record Star Trek and edit Star Trek.
This is why I want the government to subsidize this. I want from each according to his ability to make a Star Trek podcast to each according to his willingness to listen to a Star Trek podcast.
I couldn't think of the word avalanche. The fuck is the matter with me?
Somebody is like a first-time listener because it's the block party, and they're
let me
give this a try. And they're like, wow, these guys are fucking morons.
Yeah, great. I ruined it. I ruined block party. I drove my car through the street closed signs and smashed into the table with all the food.
Yeah, this was our big opportunity to pack new listeners on, and we fucking blew it.
Yeah.
Oh!
Was anyone expecting anything different? I wasn't.
It's like an opportunity to double the number of torpedoes you have on your starship, and you don't even think about that opportunity. You just think about Harry Kim and a baby, Adam.
You know what? I was wrong about what I said before. I did expect it to go this way. I just expected you to be the one that ruins it.
Wow.
Not me. I am the ruiner.
Yeah, you're the ruiner now. Do you want to get into season 2, episode 21 of Voyager? It's called Deadlock.
I mean, after that, Marin Open, we got to get to the show out of self-defense.
Revert course.
Unless you've got something a little bigger in your torpedo tubes, I'm not turning around.
Ben, I'm shocked in this Open that it seems like Paris did not, in fact, deliver Wildman's baby.
Yeah.
And if he did, she's already pregnant again.
She is. I mean, that was crucially, Adam, that was a lie that he told during his I'm being a dick to Chakotay for spycraft reasons days.
I still believed, Ben.
It's still real to me, damn it.
Such is my love for Tom Paris.
Yeah. Boy, you hate to see this, right, Adam? Because this episode opens with Neelix freshening up Ensign Wildman. That's a pregnant woman, Neelix. What the fuck?
Yeah, save that for a few tabs from now. That one's for later, yeah. when the first tabs aren't working.
This guy is really cutting corners in the canteen.
Yeah.
He makes the pregnant lady fix his stove, and then he wants her to fix his replicator and admits that he has been replicating cabbage and shit.
This is the thing, though. When you're a renter, the super's never going to come if you give them the list of 10 things.
Right.
But Neelix is just telling Wildman about the leaky faucet and then waiting for the super to arrive before telling Wildman about all the other things in the apartment that are broken.
Yeah, that's the way to do it. Lure them in with a falsely simple job.
It's a good thing there's a fainting couch right next to the replicator that she's fixing at the end of this scene.
Yeah.
Because she crashes right into it.
Very Victorian in design, the Voyager mess hall.
I mean, it looks like that thing wipes clean, though, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be next to a replicator?
Yeah. Yeah, it sure does. The water breaking on a surface like that is not going to be a huge problem.
Yeah.
So she is off to Six Bay, and it's big smiles all around in the mess hall. I mean, these are people that need good news. They're about to tuck into some of Neelix's cooking. So the impending arrival of a baby is great.
Cass is advising deep, regular breaths to Wildman. And a bit of dialogue I just didn't understand. Take the standard kind of breath, Wildman. You know, what you would normally do.
Wildman's like, were you in the Lamaze class, or? I think that was just me.
Right.
Kes. I was the only one running that holodeck program.
Wildman points down to below the curtain, and she's like, can you freshen this up? Because shit down there is crazy at the moment.
Yeah, it's a spiky baby, and
are we allowed to say it's a horny baby? Because I want to say it's a horny baby.
What is the definitional distinction between a horn and a spike? Like, is it just a size issue?
Like, when you get Mugatu size, they're horns.
Right.
Smaller than Mugatu, it's a spike.
Yeah, that guy talks a lot of game, like he's rocking a horn, but he is merely packing a spike.
I feel like it has more to do with the number. Like, I don't think things have five horns, but they have five spikes.
Sure,
you know?
Yeah.
Like a horn is a one or a twosie.
Anything more than two, it goes to spike? Is that it? Like,
yeah.
You can have up to two horns, but and this baby has three, right?
No, I mean, this is why the baby's horny.
You're like a fucking vax denier. You're like Googling information to try and fit your preconceived notion. I want to call the baby horny, and I need to come up with a worldview.
I'm trying to make the world match up to my comedy worldview.
Yeah.
Ben, I'm doing the best I can to make this funny.
Very nervous energy on the bridge. Tom Paris apparently not aware that labor, one of those things, can take a long time.
Am I making any sense here?
Especially where horns are involved, Ben.
Yeah.
You want to be slow.
He's like, I saw a disaster. Worf delivered Keiko's baby in like 5 minutes. What are we waiting for?
They're kind of shaped like shark's teeth in a way, where like you want the head to be positioned in such a way that we're not fish hooking our way out of the womb.
Yeah, yeah. You want them to be easing the passage and not turning into barbs.
Right.
Chakotay says a line that made me laugh a lot here. He says, I don't know why I'm so nervous. This isn't even my child. My child's going to be half Cardassian and culturally Kazon.
C- cut to Seska having like the smoothest birth ever. Like barely even feeling it. Like few people know that Cardassian children come out with the spoons inverted. Yeah. So it's just like just an extra smooth bump.
And the Kazon doctors are amazed. They're like, usually these are jammed up for hours because of the pine cones.
It's usually like the seasonal autumn section of a Michael's craft store. Yeah, it's for some reason a ton of pine cones and like foam core spills out.
Some varnished gourds? Why are these in here?
Yeah, it's a womb of plenty. Janeway has a dark comment about bringing life into a world as fucked as theirs is right now.
Yeah.
Which really like pops the balloon on the whole thing, right?
Yeah. And if that wasn't a bummer, the Vidian armada that they're bearing down on is really going to drop the crew morale through the floor.
There's a butcher's meat case amount of ships out there, around 20 ground round class starships in the distance. And Paris is suggesting maybe hiding out in a plasma storm to transit through.
It stretches like half the length of the sector.
This is like taking the forest road to avoid traffic, right?
Right.
It always seems like a good idea.
Yeah. Every fantasy novel, this winds up having been a huge mistake.
Yeah.
But Paris is more of like a mid-century culture guy. Like, he's all about cars and making out on cliffs.
I love how scary this episode makes the Vidians again.
Yeah.
And it's unfortunately not this point. Like, I'm retroactively scared of this moment after going through what we do in the set, because the idea of 20 of these ships out there and what they would do to their bodies.
Yeah.
It would just be like a pile of wet gloves when they were done with them.
Yeah.
I'm in no mood to donate any organs today.
The show starts to really cut around quite a bit here.
Mm-hmm.
We are doing the transit of the plasma field up on the bridge and the delivery of the baby down in Six Bay. And it's really pacey. And they make it through the plasma field, but their warp engines go out.
They draw the equivalence between the ship's transit through the plasma storm and this horny baby's transit through the womb.
The warp engines are out, the impulse engines are out, and B'Elanna Torres comes up with the idea of doing proton bursts to fix this situation.
Wildman's like, you're gonna shoot my baby's horns off?
This is a rare complication.
And they're like, no, this is about a different thing. BLT grabs Skulk Hogan and they are going to get to work on this proton burst situation, except for one happens before they've even started. It's like effect happening before cause.
Yeah.
What is this, a different episode of Star Trek?
What's happening here are a lot of bangers, and these bangers are occurring all over the ship. Girders are dropping everywhere. Casualties are multiplying.
Yeah, and they're like, this proton burst idea may be a huge mistake.
Yeah, maybe we shouldn't do the thing that it seems like we did, but I'm almost positive we didn't. Janeway's like, did we fire proton bursts?
According to our data banks, we have. Twice.
And she immediately surrenders to the Vidians.
Right.
Because she knows how bad this looks.
Yeah, they don't bother to beam her over to the ship. They just beam some parts out.
Speaking of beaming parts out, down in Six Bay, they have to do the sort of 24th century equivalent of a C-section, which is transport the baby out of the womb.
Transporters usually reserved for ship beaming are recalibrated to transport a baby out of the womb.
Yeah.
It's just a simple dial.
Amazing.
There's a really fun edit they slipped in here, Ben, that I wonder if you noticed, where a banger gets dropped and BLT kind of doubles over, and then we cut to the bridge and Janeway's already doubled over and she stands back up.
Oh, I didn't notice that.
That's
a really cool match on action.
Yeah, it really is.
When we come back, the ship is in really rough shape,
And it's not like we've like stabilized here.
I like how they make it seem as though the tension is, oh boy, I hope Wildman's baby is going to be all right, because as more and more people flow into Six Bay, it seems like her level of care is going to diminish.
Yeah,
you know, the more and more the people need to be triaged.
Right.
But it quickly becomes like not just about a baby and Wildman, but like an existential threat to everyone.
The math of this is really three-dimensional too, because it's like, of course, like mother and newborn need care, but also like critical engineering personnel who keep the ship running.
The horny baby doesn't have a job yet.
Right.
All right. Like, we really need the others.
And then one of the bangers affects the EMH's ability to like hold his tricorder, and you're starting to worry about like, are they even going to be able to treat these people at all?
There's a report of some incoming casualties from the mess hall. And when I heard this, I was like, hey, maybe after the first banger gets dropped, you push your plate away from the table and get back to your station. What are these people doing in the mess hall after the first one gets dropped?
Maybe they're not like coming directly from the mess hall, but they did have a meal in there recently and they've got like some tummy issues that are just starting to present.
I wonder if it's also like a shelter in place thing rule. Like if a banger drops,
oh yeah,
don't try to use a turbo lift. Don't try to run through a corridor. Stay until the bangers stop.
Yeah. This episode is so willing to fuck this setup. And I wonder from a production standpoint how scary that is. Because these are standing sets that they need to reuse week after week.
And there are so many scenes of like, of shit all over consoles.
And like BLT just like violently sweeping stuff out of the way, which I'm sure like scratches up those little, like Lexan on the screens, and they probably have to replace all that stuff.
But you need it to look right.
The doctor is for some reason treating Neelix when Kes explains to him that...
morale isn't important right now. Yeah. You know what's really going to nosedive morale? A dead horny baby.
Yeah. The baby is struggling to stay alive, and there are like hull sections coming away. BLT and Kim have been tasked to go erect an emergency force field because the emergency force fields aren't working. It's fucking crazy.
It's really trouble from all directions in a great way. The tension of the first 10 minutes of this episode is just really breathless.
It really reminded me of Star Trek 2009.
Yes, except we weren't crying during the title sequence like I was during Star Trek 2009.
Yeah. You're like, God, this is going to be a great movie. And then you saw the rest of it.
Yeah. The cold open to that movie was where the water started to roll back.
Skulk Hogan, not actually dead. He needs medical assistance. But BLT and Kim have to get that force field erected, so the doctor sends Kes down there toward him.
Kim hears Hogan get blasted in the face, and he's like, God, it's a good thing I'm a main cast character. I'm going to live forever! And then the floor opens up under him, and he's gone.
Yeah.
My God! Was anyone in here?
He's a floater. He's living the dream, Ben.
That's what we want to do.
He's living the dream of Ben and Adam.
Yeah.
It looks like so much fun.
It looks great.
God. Get those wind machines up in our faces. Get us on a cable. Float us around like Bon Jovi in the Living on a Prayer video. Give me all that stuff.
If we ever get to interview Garrett, I want to ask him about this moment in particular.
I want to talk about that and literally nothing else with him.
It'll be the Chris Farley show, but for this moment.
Yeah. So the doc elevates himself up to the top of the triage list while Wildman appears to lose hope.
I'm sorry, Ensign.
In Six Bay, nothing tests a morale officer like a dead baby, and this is going to be Neelix's greatest challenge, I think.
He does seem less upset by this than he was by hearing that Tom Paris was leaving the ship.
Kes, over here!
Kes is down there to help Skulk Hogan, and she's running down the hallway and just kind of blinks out of existence. And BLT is shocked to see this, and she's like radioing up to the bridge to explain what happened.
A lot of people in need of some freshening up on the ship. And now no one can do it but Neelix.
She does a little experiment. She throws some debris into the rift that Kes fell through and detects a breathable atmosphere on the other side. It's a Class M rift.
Opportunity for comedy not taken here. You know, I think you could really cut to the other side of the rift and have that piece of conduit hit a random crew person. Like, what the fuck? Throwing shit at me? Hogan?
Piece of shit. Janeway up on the bridge is really starting to look like a bowling champion.
The big urn hair is back, and so many bangers are dropping, we're starting to get fire bangers. The worst kind.
They can't get these fires out. They start to realize that this saving the bridge may be a lost cause, and everybody is leaving the bridge but Janeway.
Her station isn't password protected, and she's got a lot of tax documents on the screen.
Yeah, somebody were to find this ship.
Yikes.
She runs for the exit after failing to do whatever she was trying to do, and she looks back at the burning wreckage of her bridge, and she sees the ghostly images of her crew and herself working like nothing is amiss.
Does this qualify as another cut on action here? Because I really liked how we got into the POV of the apparitions that she saw on her way out.
Yeah, it was good. And then that kind of cross cuts twice, and we see we're going to need terms to talk about these two ships and crews, and I'm going to propose messy Janeway and clean Janeway. We get clean Janeway seeing ghostly, messy Janeway leaving the bridge.
Look at her. She's a mess.
And she,
that's how,
like,
you want to put it? Really?
Well, we could use Prime and Malibu. But
of all the awful things we've said this episode, I feel like that's the one that's going to get us in trouble.
Why would messy get us in more trouble than all that shit you said that we had to edit out?
I don't know.
That's your problem. Clean Janeway looks kind of ashen-faced, and Chakotay's like, "What's up, Captain? You look like you've seen a ghost." And she's like, "I did. I really did.
On a night just like this, the Voyager was driving through a terrible rainstorm. Someone shot protons at it. It sounded like a dump truck being dropped off the Empire State Building. And when they pulled the dirty Janeway out of the pile of girders, her body looked like this."
So should we call her Large Janeway in that case?
There we go.
It's Large Janeway and Messy Janeway.
Yeah. I love that Clean Janeway comms over to Clean BLT to get the sensors back online, and Hogan gives her a "make up your mind," says Hogan's face. That's some great comedy in an episode that is almost totally without it.
Yeah.
I love that moment. Everyone who's been in a workplace where all of a sudden, God, more shit, cool.
It is a very grim episode, but it finds its moments.
Yeah.
Janeway to engineering. B'Elanna, I want you to stop the proton bursts immediately.
Okay.
Understood.
This is a much happier reality where Ensign Wildman's baby got bornded and the ship did not experience a catastrophic series of bangers, and mommy and baby are doing just fine.
Unfortunately, Neelix is uninjured in this universe.
Right.
And oddly, Kes is present on the bio bed over there.
Yeah.
And Ben, I strongly believe that any time the doc is asked to wake an unconscious patient, he should...
"Wake up, Lieutenant!"
That should be his callback every time, no matter how serious the moment.
That would be great.
Yeah.
So Messy Kes has made it over to this other reality, and she's kind of recapping what happened. She was running down to save Skulk Hogan with her med kit on Deck 15, and then... and then she woke up here.
Someone hit her with a piece of conduit. She doesn't know who it was.
Somebody threw a fucking dryer vent at me. What the hell?
Janeway from off screen is like, this piece of conduit? Janeway's mind is already solved for this. Kes is not from this Voyager, and neither is this piece of conduit. All pieces of conduit are accounted for.
Yeah.
On clean Voyager.
There's coffee in another Voyager out there.
And also, I know we're all just rapping in the six bay right now, trying to figure out the Kes situation, but there is the problem of the spatial rift on deck 15.
Yeah.
That right. We've done, like, someone has just set up a couple of floor cones around, I guess.
Yeah.
That deck is still open for visitors.
It says spatial rift in English and piso mojado in Spanish. And somebody's like, that's not even a correct translation. What the fuck?
What does washing my hands have to do with a spatial rift on deck 15? Lavese los spatial rift?
Coffee black.
Make it yourself.
I'm trying to help you see this as an opportunity to grow.
Make it yourself.
Topic of plasma bursts comes up, and Kes is like, that was fucking up our ship. And Janeway is like, well, that's what we're using to fix our ship.
What the hell is going on?
Well, that's what we're trying to figure out.
They realize that they are killing the other Voyager.
Like, Star Trek is so great at this. The scene where a main character sort of has it figured out, and then we cut directly to
the McLaughlin Group, presenting inside opinions and forecasts on major issues of the day.
Where we actually explain what's happening to the rest of the crew that doesn't know. And Chakotay is the voice in the room that does that. He's describing what happened. We're getting a nice visual of a couple of blurry Voyagers on top of each other. Two ships cannot occupy the same space at the same time, ordinarily.
Right.
But these two can. And then that's the moment that Janeway cites a Kent State study and then pronounces the word...
A spatial scission.
I had no idea it was pronounced that way. For millennia, people have been making fun of my shibboleth, and here you are.
You make me feel whole again, Captain Janeway.
You pissed your shibboleth pants to make me feel cooler in front of the other students.
Is there a congenital birth defect that you would compare this to? Siamese twins? Jesus, Janeway, what the hell? What is wrong with you? You know that's not the way we talk about those things these days.
This is a bonkers scene. There are so many problems to solve. Their mission, as it is right now, top of mind for some reason, getting Kes to the hell off of this ship.
Yeah.
We've got to put her back there.
So the ship is running out of power because they shizzumed everything but the antimatter. So the two ships are basically drawing on the same fuel tank to run their warp engines. And they do have an opportunity, because if Messy Kes goes back through the rift to the other side, she can be like, hey, could you knock off using the warp engine? We could really use this antimatter or whatever.
We get a lot of scenes later where Janeway and Janeway are in the same space. We don't get a lot of scenes where Kes and Sloppy Kes are in the same space. I think that's because they look identical, except for the bruise the conduit made hitting Kes in the back of the head, right?
Right, yeah. Yeah, Kes did not get nearly as messy as some of the other characters.
I think she could even pass as not messy.
She should try and swap places, you know?
That's what I'm saying. I don't think we can rule out that they did.
Wow.
And we just don't know it.
So there's two Voyagers. There's one fuel tank, and otherwise they are occupying the same space at the same time. And they want to figure out how to put them back together. They just feel awful because these proton bursts were a really bad deal for Messy Voyager.
I don't know why that works so much for me.
But in the meantime, Messy Kes is like back down in Six Bay, kind of trying to sleep it off. But it is very uncomfortable for her to be in here with the... with the living baby, because I think she just feels a lot of guilt about all the dead baby jokes that she's been doing.
right. in the wake of the death of Baby Wildman.
I know.
And now here's a living Baby Wildman to really twist the knife about what a tragedy that actually is.
Hey, Ben, what's your favorite dead Star Trek baby joke?
What's the difference between a shuttlecraft full of bowling balls and a shuttlecraft full of dead Star Trek babies?
What's that?
You can use a pitchfork to unload the shuttlecraft full of dead Star Trek babies.
Hey, Ben, what has four legs and one arm?
What?
A Targ in a children's playground.
Oh, boy. She's expressing some real deep shit to the doctor. And she's, you know, telling him about how bad it is over there. And he's like, well, I'm sure they'll be fine. They've got another Dr. Schmalus. And any ship with a Dr. Schmalus is in good shape, right?
And Kes feels great after this.
Yeah.
That's exactly what she needed to hear.
That's the pick-me-up she needed.
Yeah. So in engineering, BLT is briefing Janeway about all the things she's tried to do to connect their Voyager to Sloppy Voyager. And what they need to do is come up with a signal that they could send to Sloppy Voyager that they'll understand, but also it can't be too complex, right? So it's got to be a tone or a sound effect or whatever.
Right.
Come up with the first annoying sound you can think of. That's what we're going to flush down the pipe here.
If you can think of the most annoying sound, that would be great.
And that is exactly the sound that they send. This is terrifically annoying. It gets everyone's attention.
What's that? I don't know. It's some kind of communism coming through all subspace bands. Coming from where?
And Messy Janeway is like, the only way to solve this is to send the same sound back. Just get it done. Ugh.
And, I mean, it works. They match their signals.
Yeah.
The clean is able to communicate with the Messy.
Yeah.
And on a panel behind them, they see Messy Janeway.
Right.
And what she tells them in this moment is, we are going to elliptically edit into the next scene where you tell the crew how plausible the story I'm about to tell you is. Which is great.
Yeah.
I read that this episode was short, like agonizingly almost 10 minutes short.
Oh, in the initial cut?
And when I see a scene like this, like, you know where all the fat was removed, right? A scene like this is, I think, where you could bulk it up to get it up to time. But I think you only realize how short you are once you start delivering cuts, so.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't go back for this one.
I guess not. It seems like it wouldn't be that hard to, you know, I mean, it's just one actor and two setups, right? But
yeah.
If you were going to do a reshoot, but they also don't always have time.
You're
to
not
going to
get bigger in continuity with that hair, though, if
right.
you go back for a reshoot.
Right. She can't win the bowling championship twice.
It's interesting that this is treated as a technological problem to solve and never a morality problem to solve, at least at this point, right? Because what has happened here is we have new life, and there it sits. It sits exactly where you sit. And where I sit, they're right on top of us.
I did really wish that there was some discussion of the metaphysics of this. Like, when
yeah.
they remerge, will Janeway have the memories of Messy Janeway and Clean Janeway in her head in parallel?
I wanted to know that, too. We get straight into the deflectors and not about who is the alpha and who is the beta of the pairs here.
They have to depolarize a subspace field or something. And there's going to be a resonance pulse, but the Messy Voyager is really low on power at this point. So it's going to be, they've got like one shot at this, and they've got to make it work.
I really love how it's just Star Trek banter, Star Trek banter, Star Trek banter. But what really slaps is just the visual, like the ship passing through the other ship.
Yeah.
Ghostly.
They give it a try, and cutting to the wide shot for the attempt at merging the two ships made me really nervous.
Yeah, usually a bad sign, cutting to the wide shot. And it is a bad moment here.
The merger does not take effect. The Securities and Exchange Commission has some problems with it and doesn't go through.
Everyone's been slimed for some reason.
Yeah, and comms are down. They can't even communicate anymore.
I mean, with comms down, the rift seems to be like the only way left to communicate with the messy Voyager. And so Kes is like, cool, I mean, I'm ready to go. We've developed the tech to allow me to go back home. So I'm just going to go do that. And Janeway's like, not so fast. Fit me for a cuff too. I'm going with. And so with a dustbuster and a tricorder, Clean Janeway goes through to the other side with Kes.
Why do you think Clean Janeway took the gun?
This is a question as crucial to me as the unanswered one about the morality of creating a second life, because if you suggest in the earlier scene that the different pairs of crew people are going to act toward different ends,
yeah,
it makes the phaser a really interesting thing to hold
right
in this scene. As it is, it serves no utility in the story or anywhere else.
It's Chekhov's phaser, and it's like it caught my eye the second they show a wide enough shot of her that you see it, and I was like, fuck, what is going to happen? Is she going to shoot her way out of messy Voyager? She's going to be like, I came here for your torpedoes and only your torpedoes.
Yeah, she's got like a wheelbarrow behind her running through the corridor back to the rift. You know, when talking it all out, Ben, it does seem like a successful red herring in the scene and in the moment.
Yeah.
Like, I'm unsatisfied by it because I want more of an arrow pointing to it and a reason behind it. But its very existence creates the kind of chaos in my mind that I think was intentional.
I think that's a great way of looking at it. And she gets her great grand entrance where she gets to walk into engineering while Messy Janeway is saying, like, we're out of options. And she's like, I might have some ideas about options.
Messy Janeway grabs Clean Janeway's dustbuster and holds it to her temple. And she's like, I got a way out of this for everyone.
You have no idea what it's like here. The Vidians are everywhere. We don't want to go back.
Big Earn Janeway and Clean Janeway rap about what to do here in a scene that is really, really cool and not cheesy in the two people with mismatched eye lines talking to each other about something heavy. They like actually reduce the list of options down to, in a very hushed tone, I'm thinking that the plan should be to blow up the ship.
I tried to blow up the ship a couple episodes ago. And it only seemed to, like, kind of trigger everyone's ASMR, but this time, I'm gonna fucking do it. But first, I'm gonna crumple up this receipt.
See these two pieces of conduit here? Listen as I scrape them together. That's nice, isn't it?
Oh, look, I have a piece of toast here, and I'm gonna drag my knife across the surface. But then, like, right after that, I'm gonna blow up the ship. The math here makes a lot of sense, right? It is Messy Janeway offering to blow up the messy Voyager. It's like, listen, we've got two ships. One of them is in real bad shape. We're going to blow up the bad one.
She kind of lilies herself. I'm going to blow up the damn ship. And then Clean Janeway is like, no!
Hey, speaking of that, I got to see the gold ships from First Contact recently, Adam.
Wow.
I went to the Skirball Center here in Los Angeles. Has the Star Trek exhibit that's touring. It was at the MoPop in Seattle originally.
Where I saw it.
Down here in LA. I got to go I got to take a tour with our buddy Manu Saadia.
Oh, and, fun.
Right as you walk in, you walk past Kirk's chair and then there are the little ships and they've been put back together. They're not broken anymore.
What's it got to be like to pack up an exhibit like that and then unpack it on the other side?
Yeah. You don't want to break anything. Paul Allen will have you fucking killed.
Yeah, Paul Allen's been dead a long time. It's his sister Jody that has been rolling him in his grave ever since. Totally destroying. Look, like Paul Allen was not a great billionaire because there are no good billionaires. But but Jody is an even worse idea.
Wow.
I highly suggest you you Google search Jody Allen and then security detail and then maybe G-string and then maybe penguin bones and customs. Okay. Do all of those and see what comes out. I think you will be shocked at did what you, just, you read.
Did you just read your password reminder to me?
Yeah. You'll be able to get into my computer with those clues. Yeah, all billionaires are horrible people. Fuck them.
Fuck them.
I've got to get that platinum. Get that
robe enlargement.
I've got to get that platinum.
What now? Are you planning a heist?
Gold.
Back on the undamaged Voyager, Ben, the clean Voyager, a Vidian ship shows up at the wrongest time.
Yeah.
I was so ready for this to happen. Because they've been given too much time to just lay back in the cut solving a Star Trek problem without some external force at play.
Seriously. And these are some of the rottenest Vidians we've seen so far.
These are meaty kings, aren't they?
They are.
One of them's a real long burger.
Yeah, one of them's a long burger and the other's a lumpy burger. And they can tell something weird is going on with the Voyager. They can tell that there's some kind of Star Trek problem going on over there, but they're like, well, anyways, they're sitting ducks, so let's go get us some organs.
They drive their Arby's class ship like right over the top of Voyager and then drop a couple of umbilicals into it.
They begin boarding the ship, and this is really scary. Like, they have those tricorder phasers. They get Tuvok, like, right away.
They are so efficient with what they're doing. It felt like Star Trek First Contact when the Borgs were moving through the ship and just, like, zip, 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 quickly shooting their fangs into people and assimilating them. It was horrifying.
I think that the thing that separates this from Star Trek First Contact is that they just didn't have the budget or time to have lots and lots of people in this loaf. So I think there's, like, three of them, maybe.
Yeah, but later on we learn there's hundreds of them doing this around the ship. It's just terrifying.
And we watch a lot of people get it. We watch Tuvok get it. We watch Paris and a few others get it. And it's like they're just like walking around with those six-pack coolers from the 80s that they do live organ transplants on the back of Vespas with, filling them up.
Let me ask you a question. Do you think that the amount of main character casualties happening in the scene cuts against the tension that we should feel about whether or not anyone can be saved and we can return to normal at the end of the episode? Like, as much as I enjoyed in the terrifying way seeing all of this destruction happen to people I care about, it went past the tipping point into that area of, well, this isn't real. This is going to be righted. They're killing too many people at once. In the way that, like, kill one main character and it's like appropriately believable for television. But when you kill six of them, suddenly you know that things are going to be put back to normal at the end somehow.
Yeah. I mean, I was mostly just feeling like, oh shit, like this is now fucking up the good ship. Like there was the one that we want to like walk away with, and
It's messy transference, isn't it?
So I think what it's in there for is like it makes you confront, are you valuing the ship or the lives of the crew more as a viewer?
I wish they did that thing where a Vidian goes up to your body with the meat phaser, hits a button, and then your body is set up on that trick magician's table, like where your legs are under the table and your fake legs are sticking out, and part of your body just kind of sinks from the empty space of the gut that gets pulled out.
Oh, yeah.
Give me some of that.
It'd be a neat effect.
Yeah.
They've got
and it's
hide,
a practical, too.
They've got to hide the baby. Nobody thinks to use these horns on the Vidians.
Yeah, Doc Holliday just grabs the baby by the ankles and starts swinging.
And the Vidians are not equal to this attack.
Yeah, he turns those Vidians into Ensign Wildman's nether regions pretty fast.
Yeah. So the Vidian, I don't know why the Vidians sent guys to Six Bay right away. It seems like you would get cleaner, better organs elsewhere on the ship.
Six Bay is sort of the Stater Brothers of the ship. if you're going for meat, you really want to take it over to a premium grocery store near the bridge or near the mess hall.
Yeah. I guess it's not quite the last place you would go. The last place you would go is Neelix's, where you know that these people have recently come in contact with that food and most of their internal organs will not be usable.
Phaser blast damaged the right kidney, but the other organs are healthy.
And they basically realize that this is an unwinnable fight. There are hundreds of Vidians on the ship. So Clean Janeway FaceTimes Messy Janeway and is like, listen, the auto-destruct is going to be happening over here. I'm actually going to do it. Me.
I've got this hairbrush here, and all my big iron hair is kind of sticking out. Why don't you listen to me? Just draw a brush through my hair. That's nice.
Now I've got this nice clicky keyboard, and I'm going to put in the command codes for the self-destruct on this keyboard. Nice thock on each key as I push it down. She's going to send Harry Kim and Baby Wildman back through the rift.
It does not appear as though Kim has a choice in the matter, which is a great bit of power dynamics happening here.
Yeah.
He can't say anything.
Well, he seems like happy to do it. Nobody else on the bridge raises their hand and goes like, could I go too, Captain? I mean, I know that there's going to be like a limited number, but...
I'm pretty sure I'm dead over there too.
I say we let him go. See, that guy agrees.
People are going through the rift, killing their counterparts over there, then coming back and telling Janeway that their counterpart's dead.
Yeah, it turns out Paris bought it also. Federation phaser hit him, and we don't know how that could have happened, but it did.
Yeah, what's weird is though, like, while we joke about the interest that many people would have in fleeing and going to live on the other ship, there are other mismatched casualties, but it's just Kim and the baby. And the horny baby that get this opportunity.
And a wheelbarrow full of torpedoes.
Yeah. Kim has got a bandolier of just one torpedo casing around him.
Tuvok has got to be ashamed of himself after what happens when Kim storms Six Bay and takes out the Vidians solo.
Yeah, I mean, God, the scene opens with the doc overhearing the Vidians doing their awful business and asking about where the baby is. They're like doing an accounting of the bodies in the room. A real gross kind of accounting.
Nasty
the sort
stuff.
Of accounting that is as nauseating as our own actual accounting for our business. And in bursts Kim with like a really cool three-part action sequence of shooting and diving and rolling and shooting again. It's great.
Yeah.
Episode for Garrett Wong.
He does great. He sells the shit out of his shoulder roll. I thought it was awesome.
He snatches that baby like Chow Yun Fat and hard-boiled.
The deads on Messy Voyager are going to be replenished. I wanted to talk real quickly about like how the self-destruct gets set, because the captain does it by herself and the ship does not ask Chakotay to concur.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those rare instances of the computer putting Chakotay in the ball-kicking machine.
She does not ask anybody's opinion about this course of action. I mean, Chakotay doesn't pipe up.
The computer chooses this moment to announce to the rest of the ship that it has taken Chakotay's DNA and has created some sort of half Chakotay, half computer baby.
There will be no further audio warnings.
So Kim jumps through the rift just as Clean Voyager explode, taking out the Vidian ship. Another really fun effect. We cut to the wide shot and it's two ships exploding, and then the explosion clears and there's an intact Messy Voyager just sitting there looking fine. Messy but fine.
it would have been welcome for any of the crew people who have demonstrated special mental abilities to feel the death of their counterpart, you know?
Oh, yeah.
As it is, I feel like this amount of death is just sort of breezed past very, very quickly. But, like, there's a reality to the idea that they all died and they all lived.
There really is. I mean, this is something that Tuvok unpacks a bit with the captain, talking about the, like, crazy ethical quandary she was faced with.
And Janeway's like, I'd like to tell you what I was thinking in that exact moment, but that's just for captains to understand. Anyway, see this carpet under my shoe? I'm just going to draw my shoe across the carpet a little bit.
And now I'm going to take this bag of Doritos, and I'm going to take a single Dorito out and put it flat on the table, and then push my finger down on it.
All of my examples are stupid and like and like made up in the moment. You've actually watched these videos.
I have
clearly.
Not. I'm just imagining things that make those kinds of sound. I think my examples are just as dumb.
You just have a better imagination for this than I do.
I'm just closer to being in a dream state right now, is the truth.
Yeah.
The button on the episode is Harry Kim cracking his knuckles on both hands and saying, I've got a whole new Voyager here. I haven't fucked anyone on this Voyager. Let's get going, baby.
Wow. Does his odometer get reset here?
I think it does.
It is very weird that Kim is sharing some sincere concerns about his life on the ship going forward. And Janeway just tells him to rub some temporal dirt on it and get back to work. We so rarely get the, what are you going to do? This is Star Trek, freeze frame, roll credits.
Yeah.
But we get it here.
It's a very lower deck style answer. Like she says, like, this is basically what you signed up for, bub. Shit is weird as hell here. Did you like this episode, Adam?
You know, I'm really easy to get along with most of the time. But I don't like bullies, I don't like friends, and I don't like you.
I think the end of this episode comes very close to affecting how you might like the rest of it. So this did not ruin the punch of the rest of the episode to me.
Yeah.
Still found the punch very tasty. This told me that it was going to be like one of those classic sci-fi stories of double crews. And it wasn't exactly what I thought it would be based on your preview to the episode. And it surprised me in a lot of places, in ways that were satisfying. And it horrified me in ways that I was not expecting. Like, I thought my tolerance for the Vidians was already there. Like, I'm already looking at dark web Vidian shit at this point. Like, all the normal stuff does not move the needle for me. And I was surprised / delighted that, like, they still have the gross out power. They are gnarly. And good episode for it.
Yeah, absolutely.
What about you, Ben?
Yeah, I agree on all points. It's a very inventive way of doing an episode like this that kind of pulls on some ideas that we've come across in Star Trek before, but really puts a new spin on them and puts a very Voyager-specific spin on them. And it really highlights how much more willing this show is to make it feel like we have crossed a Rubicon.
Yeah.
Multiple times a season, like, wow, that is really going to change, like, how this crew behaves in the future. And I believe it will, like, sincerely.
It makes you wonder if this Janeway has just gotten a little too used to killing both herself and others. She seems pretty comfortable with the idea. She seems very comfortable with just bringing a phaser over to a parallel universe, basically.
Yeah, she sure does. Well, Adam, do you want to bring a phaser over to the Priority One inbox?
If I see duplicates in the Priority One inbox, I know what to do.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Ben, our first priority one message is of a personal nature. It's from Nibble, the one that received the last message.
Oh.
And it's to Nibble, the one that sent the last message.
Okay.
And that message goes like this. I write this on our sixth Grinderversary.
Cool.
For our second wedding anniversary since I first saw you on Grindr. Proudly announcing that your spirit animal was Jordy LaForge, I knew that we were meant to be. If I had any doubts, they vanished when we were both equally thrilled after Adam and Ben tossed us scarves at Sketchfest.
Whoa!
To many more adventures!
Wow, both Nibbles got scarves at Sketchfest?
I'm kind of shocked that that anyone we hit with scarves has stuck around with the show. As I remember, you really gunned them out there. Like, we had knots tied in the middle so that they would fly further.
Yeah.
And,
yeah, I knocked a lot of drinks over that night.
Yeah.
Wow, happy anniversary, Nibbles.
You know what? Here's the thing. If I were writing a dating profile or a Grindr profile, mm-hmm. which is a very different thing.
Not always the case that a Grindr profile is soliciting a date.
Right. I probably saved the Jordy LaForge thing for later. That's not the tone I'd want to set.
Right, yeah. You want to be like mid-coitus when you drop that bomb?
Right, yeah.
Well, our second priority one message is from the dead Harry Kim left floating in space like nothing even happened. And that's to anyone who cares, parenthetically, apparently no one.
I love this.
The message goes like this. Little help here? Anybody? Pretty sure I still exist, since I'm originally from the Voyager that didn't self-destruct. So, no funeral then? Not even gonna phaser cremate me? Just tumbling through the inky void forever then? Anybody? Hello?
God.
Oh, well.
This show does not have the gramba to cut to the exterior, show us frozen Harry Kim spinning in space slowly, and then throw us the three credits.
Yeah.
Well, Adam, if folks would like a Priority One message, they can head to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. Book it now. We've got lots and lots of availability over on The Greatest Discovery, and we've got availability on this show as well, but it is quickly getting claimed for 2022, so get on it if you want it on The Greatest Generation. Hey, Adam.
What's up, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Incredible!
Drunk Shimoda!
I mean, I thought I had my drunk Shimoda selected, but frozen, floating Harry Kim is an idea I can't get out of my head.
Yeah.
And the idea that they just forgot about him. Here's what I want to do with my Shimoda. I want to make frozen, floating Harry Kim my Shimoda so that we can never forget him.
Yeah.
Let's cement him into the tapestry of Greatest Gen. Let's
wow.
make him a canonical Shimoda.
Okay.
Where he'll live forever.
I had one selected as well, but in order to make Colin Dinsmore's end of season Shimoda power ranking, you need to have at least two usually. So I'm going to join you. We're going to daily double this Shimoda for that reason.
That's big. Really good job by us, Ben, doing the right thing.
Yeah. It's huge of us, really.
Objection noted. We'll do this without you.
Do it.
Also huge is the fact that we are past that goddamn banger on the Game of Buttholes, The Will of the Caretaker. Adam, do you want to go over to gach.biz/game and get your dice ready while I tell you about the next episode?
Sure thing.
The next episode is Season 2, Episode 22, Innocence. After crash landing on a moon, Tuvok encounters three terrified children who claim they've been brought there to die.
Tuvok counts up all the kids and is like, "It took your mother 13 days to give birth." That was a fun bit of trivia from this episode.
Yeah. Usually labor is shorter on second and third children, right?
Hey, I don't know anything about how that works.
Maybe Vulcans are wired a little bit differently. Who knows?
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
Well, what I do know for sure, Ben, is our runabout is slowly pulsing on square 25. A couple squares ahead, we've got the Naked Now episode, which I for sure am not going to hit with this roll of my die.
Famous last words. Roll that bone, Adam.
I have rolled a 6.
Whoa!
Chula! Did I win?
Hardly.
Which puts that in the distance. We're currently on square 31.
Wow.
It is a regular old episode. And we are on the fourth row of the game.
That was fast. We got.
Yeah.
We spent so long on the second row. I feel like we had like so much pent-up momentum that we just spurted onto the fourth row.
Yeah, I've been rolling dice like ropes, getting this way out into the distance. I don't know. I mean, I am hoping the creators of this game, by that I mean Philippe Sobriero, Craig Anderson, and Andrew Wong Hoyer, didn't get under the hood of this thing and change how the dice worked. I was entertained by how long we were stuck.
Yeah.
But yeah, now we're on the fourth row.
You were entertained. I was fucking outraged.
Yeah. Yeah, we had very different feelings about the game at that point.
Yeah. I was starting to really lose my temper. Wow. Well, I'm really looking forward to a regular old episode next week about a bunch of children dying. And,
yeah, Star Trek and kids episodes are always the best ones, right? Is this Voyager's Rascals? Is that where we're going to get here?
Oh, I don't know. Well, if you enjoyed the episode, maybe tell a friend about it. Maybe tell a colleague or a family member that you enjoy the show and recommend they listen. And hey, this being the Max Fun Block Party, check out some other shows on the network. There's also The Greatest Discovery, but there's also Miriam, other shows about all different topics. And a lot of them are really, really great. And some of them are even better than this show.
Yeah, right.
If you're interested in supporting the production of The Greatest Generation, you can head to MaximumFun.org/join and set up a monthly membership. We really appreciate that.
Yeah, and make sure the show keeps going in these uncertain times.
Yeah.
So many people contribute to the show's quality.
Yeah.
Makes it more fun to be a friend of DeSoto. You know what I'm talking about. You want to talk about the show? You want to make a new friend? That's a friend of DeSoto. You can do that in all of the places that have social media. Bill Tilley is our social media director. You can talk about the show on Twitter using the hashtag GreatestGen. You can follow and subscribe the official accounts of The Greatest Generation. They're at Greatest Trek on Twitter, at Greatest Trek on Instagram. There's DrunkShimoda.com, the Discord, and Miriam Facebook pages, just full of all kinds of interests. The main interest being Greatest Gen, and then the tertiary interest being stuff like cooking or exercising or making babies or
all kinds of stuff. There is a group of friends of DeSoto that watch Drag Race together.
Oh, yeah.
You can subdivide it basically any way you want. We got to thank Adam Ragusea, who made the Janeway song, our theme music, and Dark Materia, who made the Picard song on which that is based. Got to thank Nick Ditmore for helping us get podshop.biz set up.
Yeah, got to thank Nick Ditmore, helping us create new items all the time for podshop.biz. That URL again, podshop.biz.
That's true, Adam. And with that, we will be back at ya next time with another great episode of Star Trek Voyager and an episode of The Greatest Generation Voyager where Tuvok finds out where children go to die.
Oh no.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.